Again, my name is Paula Stutman, and welcome to the Museum of Modern Art and to our Art in the Long View lunchtime lectures. And Art in the Long View focuses on art that has expanded time frames. Maybe it expands way into the future, or it has an incredibly long past attached to it. And the topic today for our experience together is titled Interrogating the Changing Artwork. And what we're going to do for our time together today is we're going to talk together about two works. Both have a past. One work has a definite completion date, though at present that date remains unknown. Another work has the possibility of continuing indefinitely. Our format today is based on the children's game of 20 questions. And if you're unfamiliar with the game of 20 questions, you know, you might remember it when you were a child. One person has the answer, and then the rest of us play the ones who, you know, come up with the questions to try to find out that answer. So today, for our time together, it's a participatory experience, and I am not the person who's holding the one answer. What we're going to do is I'm going to introduce each of the works with a brief introduction. And then I want you as a group to come up with 10 questions for each work. And again, the goal is not to come up with one answer or one single meaning for the works, but to really generate a conversation about the work. I work in the education department at MoMA, and sometimes the best way to really engage with works, especially works that can be difficult or challenging, is to really have a discussion and talk together. So the idea in generating the conversation, in generating the questions from the audience is you have the opportunity to shape the conversation. And we'll see how long we can get the ball rolling. So our goal is to really explore the works under discussion and to also explore what happens when we talk about art together. So with that said, I'm going to introduce the first work. This is a work that's actually part of MoMA's collection. And it's a work by Adrian Piper. It's called What Will Become of Me, 1985, ongoing. The materials are hair, fingernails, skin, jars, shelf, and type text on paper. And in Piper's personal personal biography, where she makes a chronology of her life, for the year 1985, among other things that she includes for that year, she includes the following facts: that her father dies from cancer, she swims daily, she views every episode of the TV show Dynasty that was shot up to that point in 1985, and she also begins the continuing self-collection of the piece, What Will Become of Me. It started on December 1st, 1985, and for this work, she has collected her hair, her fingernails, and skin, and they're stored into honey jars. And she's filling up, you know, as she fills up one jar with hair, and when it's filled, she gets another jar, and she fills it up with some more hair. And the work will be complete after Piper's death, because the final jar will hold her ashes. There's two frame texts that you see, in this work, and I just want to tell you what they state. In the one, when you're looking at the image on the projection, the text on the left reads as follows. The final form of this piece will comprise the statement, What Will Become of Me, together with honey jars storing hair, nails, and skin, collected from 1 December 1985. I intend to donate this work to the Museum of Modern Art. And I will let you know that this is from the Museum of Modern Art's website. The Museum of Modern Art does own this work at this point. It is in the collection, and I pulled this image off from the website of the collection. The image is not available, it's not on view at the moment, but it is part of the collection, and of course the work will look different when it's exhibited because it will have that final jar of ashes. And also, because Piper is still living and I'm assuming healthy, we don't know how many more jars of hair, nails, and skin will be added to this work. The other text that you see on the right reads as follows. 1985 was a bad year. My father had been diagnosed with cancer of the larynx the previous fall. My marriage began to fall apart in January. I sought counseling to help my mother deal with my father's illness. My father died in April. In June, I received my senior colleague's yearly evaluation of my philosophical work. which they had written up after consulting a university lawyer about how to deny me tenure without incurring a lawsuit. Piper is also a professor of philosophy. In it, they described my work as incoherent, inadequate, and defective, and me personally as baffling, frustrating, and unresponsive, although poised. During the following summer and fall, my marriage deteriorated further. By the time I was denied tenure in mid-December, my husband and I had not been on speaking terms for weeks. I felt sure that if I could just hold myself together for long enough to escape from Ann Arbor, I'd be all right. So, that's the work we are talking about right now. I'm going to throw this back to you as participators in this discussion, and I want to get from the group, I'm going to write them down, and Allison is also going to write them down, 10 questions that you would like to ask about this work to generate a discussion. So who wants to start it off? Yes.
Why did MoMA accept this work?
The question, first I'm going to write down all the 10 questions and then we will throw them back and talk about it together. Why did MoMA accept this work? Anybody? Another question? Yes.
The shelf is going to be expanded, or the jars are going to be stacked on top of each other if she lives longer to make room for
okay.
things.
And that's a question about display.
The display going to change.
Okay. Okay.
I have two questions.
Okay.
Are the last two jars going to be replaced with larger jars? And do the jars contain honey?
Okay. Yes.
Why do you think this is art?
Okay, great.
What was that question?
Why do we think this is art? And I'll repeat all the questions out loud. And if we need it, we have a microphone here too. Hold on. Okay, Heather. Okay. Okay. Yes.
As an organizer, I wonder how does MoMA store all of the work that they received from her?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Questioning why she chose to use honey jars. Had it had something to do with the sweetness.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Is her other work autobiographical, or is this one an all?
Say that question one more time.
Is this typical of her work, or is it an all?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
How is she doing now?
In terms of her
life. 85 is a bad year, is it still a bad year?
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
Are there any extraordinary conservation measures that are being taken, or will it all eventually decay?
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, for some of the questions, I don't have the answers for you as you're asking me. For instance, in terms of conservation, I really don't know how the museum is handling it in terms of conservation, if they are doing anything to save it, to leave it, to give it a longer lifespan, or if they will let it deteriorate naturally. There are no other rules attached to the work from Piper. I also don't know other questions in terms of how it will change in terms of display. I have seen it displayed in different ways. When there's less jars, it was on a shelf as well, in reproduction, not in real life. So I don't know how that will be in terms of the installation. Though it's always with the framed text pieces on the side of it, and the jars, next to it. But I don't know if it could change.
Did she give any instructions?
There's no instructions about that. The instructions that I gave to you are the instructions that are written out and included about the work, that she wanted it to go enter into the museum's collection, which it has, and just that personal information from when she started this work. The jars will remain the same sizes that you see, that the larger jars, the honey jars, are the ones that are filled with hair. The one right next to it, which has, it's not quite filled, but it's filled more than the one right next to it, is filled with the fingernails. And the one right next to it is filled with little pieces of skin. How does she decide what goes into the jars? Again, I don't know if it's everything. I don't know this information. Are there some pieces of hair that she doesn't include? Are these all the clippings from her hair over her lifespan from 1985 onto the present moment, or has she chosen to only do it at certain times? She makes it clear that it's fingernails that are included in there. So I'm going to, again, the question comes up, I don't know if it's every single time she clipped her fingernails. Though I'm going to assume it, because that's how she lays it out from her outline of the work. Why did she choose honey jars? She's specific to choose honey jars, and I don't have words from the artist, but I'll throw it back to the group. And who is the person who asked the question about honey jars? Why did you bring up the idea of why? What is it about honey jars that influences
the
work? It's sweet.
It's sweet.
Okay.
And she doesn't seem to have a very sweet life.
Okay. Anybody else? How do we want to interpret it by the choice of using honey jars? She could have used another kind of container to incorporate her bodily elements, but she did choose a honey jar. Yes?
I guess that maybe honey has a longevity, and this may mean that she wants her work to have longevity.
Okay, that honey has a longevity, and she wants her work to have a longevity. Okay?
It's a natural.
It's a natural, yes, I think that's a wonderful observation, that it's a natural, yes, if everybody didn't hear the idea that it's a natural material, just as the natural material she's incorporating from her own lived experience, yes.
Was there honey still in the jar?
No, the jars are, there is not honey still in the jars. And I think, you know, if you look at the jars and you're someone who uses honey on a regular basis in your life, they are familiar as honey jars. She does list in the information in that text that it is honey jars that she's using. Any other interpretations of why the honey jars in the work? The other question, somebody asked, is this typical of her work? Her, you know, she is an artist that's associated with conceptual practices, so conceptual art as it emerged in the 1960s and the 1970s, where she might set a plan or set a framework to develop a body of work. And as her work developed, her work also dealt with her physical body as well in a performative manner, and her work also dealt with issues of race as well. So there's that conceptual framework that she used, particularly with her early works, and also her work using a conceptual framework. I'll give you an idea. This work was included in an exhibition called The Quick and the Dead, which took place in 2009 at the Walker in the Midwest. And at the Walker also included it was another piece she did about time, where she placed two watches, one that represented her mother's watch, one that represented her father's watch, where they were set at the same time, and then they would run until they were their time was off by 12 hours, and then they would be reset. And like this work, and this is true of, you know, you can see it with particularly a lot of conceptual work, with that work as well, there was information or instructions or a definition of the work in a typed text that accompanied it as well. So her work is conceptual. Her work is also often has a framework applied to it, and her work is also biographical too, that she uses elements of her own life. Whether it is her experience of being an African American in our society, whether it is her experience of her parents, both of her parents died of cancer related to smoking issues. So she incorporates elements of her biography in her practice. How is her life now? I can't speak personally for Adrienne Piper to say, I can't tell you exactly what state her life is at 2013. I know she maintains her archive and her foundation and continues her work as an artist, and she is an active artist at the moment. Other question that came up, Why do we think this is art? Who is the person who asked that question? Why do we think this is art? Okay, I'm going to throw that question back to the audience, and I think that's a fair question that would come up with a work of this nature. Why do we think, how do we want to address or tangle with that question? Why do we think this is art? Why might it not be art? Okay. Anybody else?
It's an original idea, but many original ideas are not art, so I have ambivalent feelings about it.
For you, that you have ambivalent feelings that it might not be art. Who else feels that this, who else feels similar in dealing with this work? Do you care to share your feelings?
I just share that same feeling. It doesn't strike me as something
okay.
A funky kind of piece.
Okay. Anybody else who's tangling with the question why, and you're the person who brought that up, would you care to share your?
Yes, because you said this would be also ashes. Uh-huh. So dead body is art, ashes is art, I don't know.
Okay. For anyone who wants to argue, and I know from working in MoMA and working in other institutions with art that can be challenging, it's a question that comes up over and over, and it's a fair question to want to tangle with and engage with. And I'm going to throw this question out there, and does anybody want to jump in? What is it that might not make this art, in someone's opinion? I think that's a great observation to bring up, that it lacks the technical expertise that other artists have displayed. And I'm jump in if I'm getting this wrong, that I think what you might be saying in terms of technical expertise, we might be referring to, let's say, painting or sculpture or more traditional mediums,
right.
Photography.
Voice, lighting, shadows, all the traditional structured academic foundational.
Okay. Okay.
It's
anybody else?
Lack of transformation.
A lack of transformation.
The art must be transformed something, material.
Okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Just this point.
Okay, the idea that there's a lack of transformation within the work. Anybody else? Yes.
Well, you said she teaches philosophy.
She did teach philosophy.
And this, to me, is, if there's such a thing as a philosophical piece of artwork, because she wants you to think about her and what's going to happen to her, and in a way it's almost egocentric, but it's really a piece, I think, about her own philosophy.
Okay. So what's going to happen to her is not really very different than what's going to happen
to anybody else.
Okay. I see a lot of hands right over here. Heather, and then...
I wonder how it's different if you would say you would read about this.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And you would have a certain feeling about that information or
mm-hmm.
that project that the artist was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that different from seeing the simple elements of this piece?
That's a great question. The idea is that this work could easily be described in language. It could exist through... you could read about it. You could have it, exchanged in a verbal exchange. What does it add to it that we look at the visual elements that she gave to the work? Anybody? Heather?
Going to your comment about it not being transformative, to me it actually is transformative because it's taking the stuff we would throw away and it is preserving things. It's
mm-hmm.
that fun, switch of the ephemeral to the permanent, which is what it is.
And actually, what jumped in my mind when you said that about transformation, I think in my mind, the ultimate transformation is the flesh into ashes. But these are, everyone's going to have different interpretations of the work. Yes?
I think it's really interesting work, but I think if you took the title away, it would just be, journal entries and bits and bobs of stuff we all have in our bathroom, like stuff that's found around the house. So I'm struggling with it, whether it's a piece of art, because to me the title gives it weight.
I think that's a fine thing to bring up, and I want to draw your attention back to the statement on our left when we look at it, because she does say, including in that statement where she outlines that she wants it to go into MoMA's collection, she also wants the statement incorporated in the work, and she incorporates the title in that text. So when you bring up that the title is so important to the work, it's an integral part of the work that's actually, not only do we see it below the projected image, but we also see it in the text, and the statement itself is part of the work as well. I think that's a great observation. Anybody else?
I have a question.
Sure.
What color are the jars actually? Are they translucent or are they?
They're glass jars.
So we're seeing them as black. So.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Is the hair black inside or?
Her hair, yes. Her hair is a darker color, so that's her hair see in there.
But the one that has her fingernails obviously should be a lighter color, and yet it's not.
The smaller jar, when you look at them, all the jars that are black in color are the jars that they're the larger jars, and they're holding her hair. And then the smaller jar right next to those darker jars are the ones holding her fingernails and the little specks of skin. Anybody else?
I bet it's a lot more confronting to see it in person. It's very uncomfortable to look at those things in this context, I bet. And they are the things that outlive us. You know, they're still around. We're dead.
Yes. They're
pretty much about confronting mortality, too.
Absolutely. And being in the body and living in the body. And I think you were the one who raised the question too, how it could exist just without text for the work.
A way in my own mind to test my response to conceptual work.
Okay.
Say, would it gain in physicality, or does it not even need it? But it does, I think.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
I don't know. Perhaps it has something to do with the bee also that produces honey.
Okay.
And the sting of the bee and the
I think, I have to say I don't know a lot of information about bees, but that certainly when you look at a piece of art, particularly when you're looking with contemporary or modern art, every little element is part of that experience that we bring. When you see that it's a honey jar, and she defines it that it's going in a honey jar, it's not accidental. So all those connections you bring to honey and the making of honey are definitely things that are part of that work, and that it's housing her remains. Any last thoughts or questions about this work before we move on? Yes.
You said she's adding to this hair and so forth. How does she come in with a new jar or fill existing jars with these additions, or does she send it in and say, put it in?
I have to say that's a great question, and I just don't know the arrangements of how the work comes to be. And I think it's a great question that we don't know. Does she deliver the jars to MoMA when they're full, or does she deliver the hair to be placed into an empty jar? I really don't know. And of course, someone, yes?
And where do you keep the work that you've already received? Like, is it in a box?
That gets back to the issue of conservation. How do we conserve these elements of Andrea Piper's body? Where do they go in MoMA? How are they stored? Who's going to deliver the ashes when they go? Are they marked to, are they labeled from the oldest to the most recent? Will we see her hair change color as we age? Our hair turns gray. So is there a way that there is information allowing us to know the dates? These are great questions, and I just don't know. Yes?
If we take for granted that it is art, what makes it good art?
This is a really, you know, the easy question to ask when somebody brings up the question, why is it art? The easy answer to offer back as the educator is that we're going to respect the artist's intention, that the artist intended this to be art, so as someone who's respecting the artist, I'm going to engage with it as art. But the difficult question is, if we accept it as a work of art, what makes this a good work of art? Does anybody want to argue about what makes this art have a meaning for you as an individual that makes it a valid piece of art to spend time talking about it in the group? Yes?
Well, I think just in this format, it created a little bit of controversy.
It did,
so
yes.
Value, anytime there's controversy, that has a value attached to it.
Okay, that it, Okay, I think also too, talking about works that force us to question the nature of its art actually is a way to come closer to maybe understanding what the artist was about or what the mystery is within the work. But anybody else, is this, in your opinion, what makes this a strong piece of art for anyone who cares to share a thought about the work?
I like it because it's really lean.
Okay.
And could I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you think that the first text piece, talking about wanting it in the MoMA's collection, is a political statement about race and collecting it?
I think that's the question is, by wanting it in the collection of the of MoMA, is it a question about race? I think absolutely we could definitely bring
that's
that into part of the discussion about the work. There's all other directions you can go into by having this come into, and I'm talking, but anyone should feel free to jump in. But by having it enter into the collection of MoMA also validates it as a work of art as well. So that's part of it also. And it validates Piper as an artist. Anybody else?
I have a question too. What age was she at 85?
She was born, I want to say she was born in 1948. So I might be off by a year or so. So who's going to help me? 48 to
65.
She's in her early 60s or to mid 60s. So she would be, who's going to help me with the math right here for
47, 64.
But in 1985, her age would be
47.
Okay. Last question I actually want to leave for the group, and this is my question, and I would like to hear anyone who wants to jump in. If we consider this a portrait of the artist, of Adrian Piper, what does it tell us of who she is and, after she passes, who she was? What does it tell us about her if we consider it a portrait?
Her exterior.
Her exterior, okay.
What she looks, what part of her makeup, I guess.
Okay, part of her makeup, what she looked like, elements of her body. Anybody else? Does it tell us anything of her interior?
She's more than the sum of her parts.
She's more than a sum of her parts. Anyone else?
It's egotistical.
It's egotistical. Why is it egotistical? Okay, that she chose to put her remains, anyone else? Yes.
Would MoMA have regarded this in the same light if I had created that piece instead of Piper creating it?
The question, and this comes up actually a lot when you talk about conceptual art particularly, and the question is, would MoMA have regarded it in the same light if you had made this work instead of Adrian Piper? Does anybody else want to tangle with that question?
Do you have any more of her work?
We're only looking at this work. So, there are other works of hers in the collection.
Right.
So definitely look. And actually, that's a great beginning of an answer to the question, that she has a history of a past as an artist and a history of a future of an artist. It's not one lone object that was just made that someone put forward, but part of her whole body of work. So she does have a history. And one of the things without, I'm not showing you other works of hers, but I'm also, in terms of museum education, often when we're in a museum and we're confronted with one work that can be challenging, like Piper's What Will Become of Me, we don't have the other works to look at to have the discussion. We just have to engage with the piece as we deal with it in the present. I want to just move us along and, because we only have about 15 more minutes, and let's look at the second work. This is a work, hold on one second. This is Lee Mingwei's work. It's called the Bodhi Tree Project. He's an artist who is from Taiwan, though he's based in New York. And for this piece, it's a piece that it was commissioned by the Gallery of Modern Art in Queensland, in Australia. And there's a nice video of him talking about this work where he shares two inspirations for the project. One is a personal inspiration and one is a larger inspiration for Chinese and Indian history. And the personal inspiration comes from, there was an earthquake in Taiwan, and the epicenter of the earthquake was in the village where his grandparents came from. And his grandfather was the founder of the elementary school in the village. He went back to that village, and he saw that there were only trees standing, that buildings had been destroyed, including that school that his grandfather had created, though the children survived, the earthquake was at night. And he was invited to do a project for the area, for the village. And what he did is he proposed to plant a Bodai tree, which is the tree where Buddha receives enlightenment. So it is a very sacred tree. It's a very spiritual tree. But that project never came about. And so when the Queensland Cultural Center asked him for a public project, he thought it would be great to see this project through, that he would be moving something from a different place, from the original tree that Buddha was sitting at. And the sapling that he brings over to Australia is not from the original tree that Buddha receives enlightenment, because that's no longer in existence, but it's from the second generation tree from that original tree. And he received a sapling to bring over to Australia. And it was a project that he worked out with the Buddhist community in Sri Lanka and the Buddhist community in Queensland. And he gets a sapling to bring over and to plant this tree. And what you're looking at here is the tree that is, you know, someone just lying underneath it. And there are some images right over here. The images I'm showing you are actually from a lecture that it's online if you're interested. And he gave a lecture in the summer of 2012 in the city, where he was talking about some of his other projects, including this project. And in this image that you see right here, and that is the artist on the right, when the Sri Lankan priest placed the sapling in his hands, he said to the tree, these are the words, and I'm quoting from Lee's quote, the priest said the following: "You are embarking on a great adventure to an exotic land called Australia. Your duty is to grow big and healthy as you can so you can offer shade and protection to the animals and children there and be a focus for contemplation." And the other image too, this shows him bringing the tree. The tree, because it was a plant, it was an exotic life form, it couldn't go on an airplane. So, and I'm going to quote from the artist, this is his statement, "We actually had to deliver it via DHL. She," and Lee always refers to the sapling as she. He doesn't know why, but he does. She then had to stay in the customs quarantine area for 6 months. Australia's import rules are very strict. However, it just so happened that the customs officer who was taking care of the exotic plants, including this one, was from Sri Lanka, and her home was only a mile away from the sacred site. And she was deeply honored to have the opportunity to look after this plant and told me that it must have been all the karma from all the generations and reincarnations that she accumulated that made her able to take care of this sacred being. And there's the image of the sapling as a young plant ready to travel. And there's a more recent image. And also from that same that same talk he gave in 2012, he says that the curator called and gave him a tree health report, and this is from 2012. That the tall is 30 feet tall now, so she is growing. So questions about this work? Who wants to? Anybody?
So what's the work, the video, the photographs?
That is a good question, okay? So let's start with that question. What is the work? I'm gonna just throw it back to you. What is the work? Is the work, the question you're bringing up, is the work, the photographs, the documentation? Anybody? This work is not part of MoMA's collection. This is a work that was a public art piece that was commissioned by the Queensland Gallery of Modern Art. So the work itself, should you get to the Queensland Gallery, this tree is there. And you can go sit under the tree, you can go hang out under that tree, you can have whatever experience you choose to have or whatever occurs with that tree, which has an incredible history. And what I'm showing you, it's not part of MoMA's collection, but I am showing you some documentation of the work, just to give you a little background of it. But the work itself, it is the tree that exists, but it's also the project that he did pull together, that he brought the Buddhist communities together. The tree was blessed. I think the tree is blessed every year. But the work itself, it's a public sculpture, is the tree. Yes?
What did he add that nature didn't already provide to make the tree what it is and how it developed and so forth? He just took it from one place to another and planted it. From there on, it took its own course to be what it's going to be.
I'm going to throw that question to the group. What did Lee do to make this project happen? All he did was, you're saying it's just a tree that grows in the earth. What did he do as an artist to make this project?
Art.
I guess your question, if I'm hearing correctly, what is the art in this work from the artist?
Yes.
Anybody?
He chose it.
Yeah, he chose it. Okay, yes?
Perhaps gave it an identity separate from the other trees or tree forms.
Okay, gave it an identity. Okay, he let its identity expand into a different part of the globe.
It's a little bit like this Yoko Ono tree, which was in MoMA.
Where the wish tree that you're talking about, where
yes.
People could come and put their wishes on the tree, they tie them on, yeah. And then they went into
it
a...
It was a real tree.
Okay.
But it was an art also.
It was an art, and it did include a real tree, and it also included our participation with the work, and we could also peek at other people's wishes. What else? What did the artist do in this work to make it art? What is the... other questions then about this work? Yes?
So if it's a piece of work and now it is on display, so it was preserved and has all this history and documentation, but now it's on display with elements, weather elements around it, people, so it's susceptible to damage and destruction. So is there an insurance policy that's taken out or how is it?
First of all, I think your question is really, I don't know that, the question is, I love the statement that you're saying that it's on display. Because it's so interesting to say that a tree is on display. But it is a public art piece. And actually, when he speaks about this work, he speaks how different it is than a more traditional public art piece. You might think, let's say, of a sculpture, something that can withstand the elements. And you're bringing up the ideas of insurance and how it will last. But it is, and I don't know. That I just can't offer you. But it is a natural element that is going to be affected by other natural elements, and it's going to change. It's going to, if let's say it lives a healthy and long life, it will get much bigger. But it's vulnerable to different elements that happen. Yes.
Is there a plaque by the tree that gives it some history so that you see that they're not just giving you the generic form of the tree, but they're giving you something more?
Well, you know, I don't know because I've never visited there. The question is there a plaque giving you information? I know that there is an area, from reading about it, there is an area that was developed where the work is placed, that there is a garden area in front of the, in relationship to the museum. So I don't know. I'm assuming there might be some information somewhere. When the artist talks about this work, he shared that some people might just see a lovely tree together, shade underneath, while other people might visit it and know its history and share some of that awe or as part of that mystery about the history of the tree. And you know, the other thing is, if you come and visit it and you don't know anything about the background of it, it doesn't mean that your knowledge might change during your experience of being around it. Because it can be either a simple experience that's just under a tree, but you might become aware at some point in time of where its history is.
But you're saying that defeats the purpose of art because we can go to the Arboretum and see beautiful trees that are identified.
Okay, anyone want to tangle with that?
I was.
Okay, the idea is that we could go to one of the parks or the Arboretum to see beautiful trees, though this is a tree that is connected to when Buddha sat under the tree. It's actually the generation coming from that second generation.
But we
so
don't know that unless there's a plaque there.
That, okay, so you would have to know the information. Okay, yes.
I would think that it would be more appropriate in some kind of Buddhist center than a gallery of modern art.
Okay.
I think the what it's about is the context, and I would think it would be more meaningful to have it in some kind of environment that was based on Buddhism.
Okay. Anybody else? The idea that maybe this would have, it would be a better context to have this place somewhere instead of a modern art institution. That's something that was an institution devoted to Buddhism. Okay? Yes?
Well, because it is at a museum of or a gallery of modern art, and he's put, you know, this democratic, egalitarian, natural object in the context of public contemporary sculpture, then there's possibly something going on there.
Okay.
In terms of the meaning.
Okay, and anyone, what would that meaning be, if that it's work that's...
It could be a criticism of the accessibility of contemporary sculpture, or it could just be a way of saying it's for everyone.
Okay. Anybody else? Heather?
What happens when it dies? Will it be in the Museum of Modern Art, or like the remnants of it?
The question is, and I don't know, what happens when it dies? I really don't know. I think the hope is that it won't die. But I don't know. It's a living, breathing thing. I don't know. Which actually bears a relationship to Piper's work as well. Yes?
I'm just still curious about why it's art. I mean, is it art because he says, I planted this tree and it's a work of art?
The question, and we're getting back to that same question, okay, that we happened with Adrian Piper's work. The question is, why is this a work of art? And again, let's start from the opposite question. Why isn't it? I mean, let's just for sake of argument, why might this not be a work of art? And we can get back to some of the things that came up with Piper. Maybe there's no skill that you perceive, Emery?
The only thing that I'm thinking, at the beginning I said it's a tree, just took a tree. I'm missing, because he's not saying any message, he's not giving us any concepts. So.
Uh-huh.
For me, art, of course, it's the intention,
uh-huh.
but I need to feel something. And if I go there and I pass in front of the tree, I'm not going to feel anything. So this is where something's missing for me. Like the concept, where is not giving it to us. It's
okay.
No,
okay. Even that the idea that it's connected to the tree, to the generation of the tree that Buddha sat under, where he received enlightenment. Okay. Anne-Marie is saying that. Okay.
No, I have to know it.
The comment, and it's coming back that you would have to know it,
yeah.
Then, okay? Anybody else? Why isn't it? Yes?
If I took that photo, would it be considered under consideration as a work of art?
If you took this photo?
Yeah.
This actually is documentation of the tree. So we're looking at a documentation of his project. So I'm not showing you the photograph as an art piece, but what you're seeing in the art piece is his project of that tree. So just to be clear, that is documentation of the work. But let anybody else want to keep going of what is it that doesn't make this art?
Is it documentation that makes it a work of art?
Anybody?
I always believed that beauty was an important part of art.
The comment comes, and I think it's so interesting that what happens as, you know, we talk and we struggle with what makes a work of art a work of art. Particularly we struggle it with works that are questioning our beliefs of what makes a work of art a work of art. And you're offering that for you, beauty is something that's a work of art. Just to play devil's advocate, that another person might argue that there's nothing more beautiful than this tree. But I'm just offering an opposing point of view. I think a lot of you are feeling questioning about this work, if what I'm feeling in the audience. Is correct. Anybody else? Yes?
Well, I think the point about beauty is an interesting one, and one thing that I will say is that in looking at works of art like this, Piper's and this piece, part of the beauty for me, what makes it art, is that it changes and happens over time. So there's beauty in a process that is being played out with the audience,
mm-hmm.
and not totally hidden from the viewer. Right, like the idea is that we can watch this tree go with the artist,
mm-hmm.
and there's something
And it generated from, yes, I do. And it generated from the intention of the artist, but yes, and the museum or the gallery accepts it as a work
right.
of art. It's an agreement. Anybody else? Yes.
If another artist brought another type of tree plant, banyan tree or bamboo trees that weren't indigenous here and said, I want to plant these, and we can see how they grow and evolve. A banyan tree is a beautiful tree to, you know, see its structure. Would those equally be considered works of art?
I don't know. It depends on the artist and the way that the project is framed and how it's set up. I can't really answer that. But there is the possibility that another artist could take some living, growing element in our world and use it as a work of art. That exists, and that's happening here. We're out of time, and it seems like we've raised more questions than answers, actually. So I really thank you very much for playing along with me. And if you're interested in the works that we looked at, there's more information about both artists and the projects on the web that you can start a search to find out about their projects. Okay? So thank you. Clap for yourselves.